When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Cowboy Stories, and welcome to my interview with Steve Layton. Steve has been ranching on the Arizona Strip his entire life. His family bought the ranch and moved there from southern Arizona not long after he was born. His grandkids are now the fifth generation there on the ranch, and I'm excited for you to hear his story. Do you want to just start off by introducing yourself and tell us a little bit about your childhood and how you got involved in this kind of lifestyle?
I'm Steve Layton, and I would like to say right off that I want to thank Lindsay for doing these interviews, not necessarily mine, but it's pretty neat to hear the histories from some of the people that have been in the cattle and ranching business for their lives and on the Arizona Strip. Just it's a good thing that you're putting this together. I want to thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. It's fun.
Okay. I said my name is Steve Layton. Been ranching on the Arizona Strip all my life. My family, my mom and dad moved up from down to Tempe, Arizona. They had a farm and a dairy there, and Dad had been in World War II, and after the war, they farmed and dairied there in Tempe, and my grandpa and my dad bought this ranch up here on the Strip in 1949, and I was born in 1948, so I was just a baby when we moved up here, and pretty remote place they came to. It was 50 miles out of St. George on all dirt roads back then. Today we can do it in an hour and a half or so, but back then it was pretty tough roads, little roads. They always had a little Jeep pickup and maybe another old truck or two, but pretty slim times back then. We lived out on that ranch in a little cabin till me and my two sisters were old enough to go to school, and then we moved into St. George. Mom and Dad bought a house in there, and we moved in there. And anyway, the ranch at that time was not very developed. It had Mustangs and no fences, no water development. And so it was quite a project for a young man, for my dad, to come in and pretty much alone with just him and his little family. A lot of fences to put in. All the perimeter fences were to be built. Pipelines, corrals, just all the kind of infrastructure for a ranch had to be built through the years, which they did a lot of work out there, which we enjoy all our efforts today.
Yeah. Was the cabin that you guys lived in, was it out there already?
Part of it was there. They added on to it. It's still a pretty primitive little cabin. It's got a wood stove and a gas fridge in it and a couple of bedrooms and a little tack room and a porch out front. Pretty much the same now as it was back then. We haven't did a lot to it over the years because we don't own any private property out there. It's all BLM and some state ground. And as we was talking earlier, we run cattle on 120 sections of country out there on this permit. And it's pretty
year round, right?
It's year round. It's pretty rough country. A lot of it is, especially the upper part of it, is cedar trees and black brush and real thick. A lot of waters. A lot of game in the country. A lot of mule deer and coyotes and bobcats and some cougars. Anyway, it's just kind of been a lifetime project for one. We're third generation Roquel's. Family's fourth generation.
How did they find out about it coming from Tempe? How do you find out about something that far away back then?
I had an uncle named Guy Anderson, and he was in partners with another guy, and I'm not thinking his name now. They had actually bought that ranch a year or two before, and it was, even for back then, I think they gave $16,000 for a 600 head permit, but it wasn't much. It was pretty tough deal to even make a living out there at that time. Anyway, the winter of 1948 came, and they had brought some new cattle in there, and I think a lot of them died because it was a lot of snow that winter, and they had it was just a pretty bad deal for them. Anyway, Dad and Grandpa ended up buying it from Guy Anderson, and anyway, that's how they came to own it. But if you go on previous owners from them, back in the 30s, the Smoots brothers from up to New Harmony,
yeah,
okay,
owned it, and they had goats, mohair goats out there. As a kid, used to see a lot of just remnants from what they were there, the little cutter bars around different places where they sheared the sheep, and you could tell the goats were there because they had the cedar trees trimmed up as far as they could reach the trees. Anyway, they had a lot of goats there back in the 30s and maybe early 40s. And then from there was a couple owners, and then we came along. And we've been there ever since 1949.
I think it's neat when you can go on a piece of property like that or go look around somewhere and you can see the history of what was there before. Like, one of my favorite things about the mountain where we run on is seeing the remnants of like the old wooden troughs that are all carved out that are still laid down. I think that's pretty cool.
I can even remember once in a while finding the old goat heads with the curly horns on.
Oh, really?
That were still around the country that from goats that died out there.
So the Smoots had goats, and then your family was the first one to take cattle down there?
Well, and the ones before us had cattle in there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It was like kind of open range when you guys first were out there, because you guys would have to go clear down to...
It was a designated allotment from the Taylor grazing law, but the perimeter fences weren't there, and so there was a lot of mixing of cattle back in those days because there wasn't any fences.
Okay.
And my dad, when he first came up there, he had, like I said before, he had a dairy down in Tempe, a little dairy, and he bought a purebred Brahma bull and bred to those Holstein cows. And
that was really
some of the first heifers that he brought up there were those half Brahma, half Holstein cows, and there was genetics of them. I remember through a lot of years you'd see those spotted cows, even though they weren't very Holstein anymore, but they had that color to them.
And that's funny.
Back in those days, he had quite a lot of Brahma influence, even purebred Brahmas out there, and some of them, they'd get wild. And he was always, because early days he didn't have a lot of facilities to gather them, not a lot of help, especially the cattle on the upper end of that ranch, they'd get wild, and he was always roping mavericks. Too many memories we'd be riding or driving around the ranch and run into a bunch of cattle, and of course the wild ones would run. And we'd jump out, and each of us would rope one, and we'd end up tying them up and always try to wrap them around a cedar tree where we could get them and get them down and try to get them to a truck and drag them in a truck. Did a lot of them that way, and that just made them wilder to run them. And we're a lot different than that now. They're pretty gentle cattle compared to back in them days. Better facilities. We trap most of the cattle on waters. Are able to gather them fairly easy compared to years ago, and I'm able to manage them and move them around the ranch and stuff a lot better than we did years ago.
Is that some of your favorite memories, is doing that with your dad? I know you got a little emotional thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. It was kind of a upper part of that ranch was kind of a wild cow deal. We was always trying to catch them in traps and riding and finding them in salt traps and getting them locked in, and had some pretty bad bulls grow up, which we still have a few out there, don't we?
Once in a while.
That were Mavericks. He had a favorite old horse named Clabber, and he was out of the old racehorse Clabber down in Arizona, famous horse. And this old horse who could really run, was a good cow horse. And one day our neighbor from down south come up to help Dad ride, and Dad put him on this old Clabber horse, and they ended up jumping this big horn Maverick bull, and they was bringing him off the side of a mountain, and that old horse was just fast enough to get in the right place, and he got in front of that bull, and the bull gored him and killed him.
Oh, right there.
Well, he lived for a while. They
got
tried
him back to the house,
and they got him back and was had him loaded up and was going to bring him into the vet, but he didn't make it.
That's too bad.
A lot of different stories about wild bulls out there. We ended up shooting some of them because they'd get them in a corral and they'd jump out, and were just pretty dangerous to be around to get them. We've even done that here in the last not too many years ago. It's so bad you can't get in a corral with them horseback, or they will attack you because they're so big and mean.
Gosh.
What are some other stories that we could talk about, Roquel?
How about some of those, like when you guys would get those hunters out hunting lions and do some mule stories? You have some good mule stories too, like your sinking mule.
There was a couple of mules going clear back to my childhood that we had out there. And one that I rode a lot, he was a blue, really pretty blue mule. And he was a pretty good mule for a mule. And we used him a lot out there. And Roquel reminded me of a story. I was riding him on a pond bank, and the pond had a gopher hole or something and had undermined the bank, which it didn't show on top. And that mule's little feet sunk through and just went straight down through a cavern, and you could just see his head sticking up from the top. And he couldn't get out, so I remember walking quite a ways back to the truck and getting a shovel and shoveling for a long time to get him where he could get out. that mule had that pretty blue color, and you know the actor Slim Pickens, the old actor, you know?
No, I'm terrible with names. I recognize faces, but I'm so bad with names.
A lot of Western movies and a rodeo cowboy a lot. And if you look him up, he'd have quite a history of what he did. But he was a rodeo clown quite a bit. And this would go back in the probably the 1960s, because I'd have been just a kid or a teenager. But anyway, the Dixie Roundup, the annual Dixie Roundup, was a pretty big deal back in St. George all through the years. And Slim Pickens, they was the clown for the, and he had a specialty act and a horse that did tricks and quite a show for a halftime show and stuff. Anyway, this old horse that he used to perform with was quite old, and he was looking for a horse to ride in the parade they had every day there. Okay. At the Dixie Roundup, part of the parade and all the festivities there. And I don't know how he knew that we had that mule there, but anyway, Dad loaned him that mule to ride in the parade every day. And it was my job, I was just a kid, to ride that mule from where we lived up to the town there, the St. George. They weren't that big then now. But I'd take that mule up and ride with Slim Pickens in the parade, and got to know him a little bit, you know.
That's cool. Back then. But
anyway, he rode that mule into the old Dick Hammer's restaurant there. And Blue would do that.
That's cool. If we back up just a little bit, so when you were a kid and you guys were living out there, would you come to town very often, or could you just survive out there?
Back in the, when their mom and dad were first out there, they used to talk about coming to town once a month to buy groceries. And so they'd live out there for a month at a time.
Okay.
I don't know if we could do that today, could we?
A little bit harder.
Without going to Walmart.
Yeah.
But they knew how to do that. They'd live out there for quite a spell without coming to town.
Would you guys have a milk cow while you lived out there?
Drink a lot of canned milk.
I can't imagine Grandpa having a milk cow.
No.
Figured you just had to get it out.
I don't think he liked milk cows anymore.
No, he was over that.
But they had a propane fridge, and it was, we always had a refrigerator, and so they could keep stuff cold.
What were some of the things you and your sisters would do to pass the time?
Oh gosh, seemed like we were always busy doing projects with Dad and Mom and Dad, and just ranch work. And of course, we was always playing stuff too, and making mud pies out in the yard as little kids, which kids still do out there.
Still a thing everybody has to do when they get there.
But riding horses and just doing ranch stuff out in the country. It seemed like we were always occupied doing stuff out there.
Was it always something you were interested in, or did you think about doing something else with your life?
I always thought I wanted to ranch. Yeah, I just kind of growed up doing it and enjoyed raising the cattle every year and just being around them and working them and taking care of them. It was kind of a stewardship thing. It was something that, I don't know, very satisfying to take care of those cattle and rewarding to have a new calf crop every year and being able to make a living doing it. And it's been a good life. Yeah,
it's good. Can you talk about the stewardship a little bit more? I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand about ranching, or is the stewardship side of it and the conservation side of it.
Okay.
You mind talking about that?
I think ranching and farming are kind of a way of life. And there's a lot of, like I said before, a lot of satisfaction that comes from making the land better and in making the cattle and what we raise better each year by what we do, our inputs in it, by buying better bulls all the time and making the cattle more efficient it's just a lot of care that goes into these animals. It's a kind of a everyday thing, a lot of it, to be able to make them thrive and do good. And at the same time, and that's part of it, is the same with the land. We have to do what needs to be done to take care of the range, or it will deteriorate and go downhill. And so we need to take care of it as we go along to keep the land productive and making feed for these cattle year after year. It needs to get better, which it has. We're our grazing land out there is just, seems like it's just increased through the years and got a lot better.
That's good. I guess I didn't realize how many people outside of this kind of lifestyle would listen to the podcast. And so that's something that I like to try to mention as often as I can, because I feel like a lot of them just think that you just go turn your cows out and that's the end of it. But it's not. Like, there's a lot that goes on.
You make a good point. I think people need to realize that ranchers are here for the long run, and that's part of our job is to take care of the land and the animals and the more, not more, but as go along with the livestock, we take care of the game animals out there too. They're important to us, and we like to see all the deer and the different animals that are out there, and they're kind of part of the environment with us also.
Yeah, and any kind of improvement that you do benefits them also.
Yes, it does. Yeah, that's a part of the land out there is the animals that are on it, including us and our livestock. Yeah.
What would you say the hardest part about running cattle where you do is?
Some of the hardest years that we have had, and a big challenge for us, have been the fires, and those often happen on some of the wettest years. We'll grow a lot of grasses and annuals in the springtime, and just have an abundance of grass, and a lot of it dries up in the summer and creates a fire hazard like this year, and lightning will come along in the summer and start a fire and kind of wipe us out for a year or two till it comes back. But it does come back if we cut our numbers down and just kind of do what we have to do to get back in business again. But that's been a big problem for us through the years, are the fires. Of course, we're always either dealing with a drought
or fire.
Or fire or whatever.
Yeah. There's,
it's just part of the challenge of running cattle and grazing on the Arizona Strip, and probably a lot of other places too that we deal with.
On the flip side of that, what would you say the best part is?
I would have to say a big part of ranching is you get to work day to day with your family, and they're a part of the whole operation and business, and just day to day you get to be with your family. You don't just get up and go to work and don't see your family. They're just kind of part of the program all through the year and the seasons, and you get to do all this as a family. I think that's been a big part of ranching and farming is it's kind of a family thing.
I like that. I think that's something that I haven't really paid that close of attention to until I started raising my own family. It was like how cool it was to be able to grow up that way and to be able to go to work with your mom and your dad, or
yeah,
to feel like you can contribute.
Maybe sometimes the kids don't think it's so fun.
Yeah.
But it is a joy to be able to be able to raise your family on a farm and a ranch, and
yeah,
kind of be a, and you really couldn't do it alone. It's kind of part of the deal. It's kind of a family operation to be able to succeed and make a living. So the family is important in a lot of different ways.
Do any favorite memories in particular stand out to you when you think back to raising your family the way that you did?
Trying to think. Just a lot of good memories about being together and doing things and doing projects and moving cattle, driving cattle. It's kind of been some big...
Lots of excitement.
Get-togethers, yeah. But,
it was always, like, cool that we were always really involved, like, whether we were working or building something or dealing with cows, like, sorting cows, loading cows, herding cows, like, every step of the way, we were right in the thick of it. We were probably, like, not a lot of help most of the time.
A lot of help. Yeah.
I think. But just, like, getting to learn all that stuff, like, how to read a cow and what's wrong with this cow, you know, just like we're always just right there in the middle of everything. So just kind of knew from when we were little, we just kind of knew things, even though we probably didn't know much. We felt like we knew stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of a on the job lifetime training. You never learn it all. Seem like there's something new every day. Something's new, either on the good side or the bad side, there's always new things.
Where would you say the coolest place you've ever been horseback is?
Been all over that ranch horseback, but Roquel's taken us to some cool places that were not part of the ranch here. What was it?
That was this spring.
Was that just this spring?
Mm-hmm.
We all loaded her horses up and went down, past Mesquite, down to Riverside and down around by Whitney Pockets, and went on quite a ride down to some Indian hieroglyphics, and not just a little bit. I mean, just great big panels that are hard to get. It'd be quite a walk to get to it, but horseback, we were all able to get down in there and... It was just a different place to go that normally wouldn't get there just walking, or I wouldn't. Maybe Roquel could.
But we're pretty good at going sightseeing at the ranch, but we don't get out much aside from that.
So yeah.
When we do, we're like, oh, wow, this is great.
Seems like there's always something to do at the ranch, so we don't go vacationing a lot. That was a cool little trip. Roquel's been our activity director. She gets us going to... different places. It's been fun.
So how did you end up taking it over from your dad?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Just kind of growed into it, I guess. I don't know if there was any specific time or anything, but just through the years, as dad kind of, he was always involved in everything, up even when he was old, but as he got older, he just kind of slowed down and did less and less of it. And just kind of a thing that we just evolved into, yeah.
I think it's neat when they can stay in the family like
for
that.
Generations,
yeah.
And a lot of them don't, too. Sold or as the family grows and the family gets bigger, it just kind of gets to be people are not, family members are not interested in it anymore sometimes too.
Yeah. What would your advice be to the next generation of ranchers coming up?
I guess I would say that it's a good life, a good way to make a living. A lot of times there's not a lot of money in it, but just the joy of what we do and what we're able to raise every year. We're raising a good product for the economy, which is a satisfying thing to be able to grow food for people. I think that's a kind of a calling, I guess, that we have to be able to do that and have the ability and the know-how to go out and make a living in these remote places and be able to raise a bunch of good calves every year. And it's not a real easy life a lot of times, but we do are able to do that and make a lot of food for people. I think that's very, very satisfying. And I think young people that have the opportunity to do that, I think that it's a good way to live.
That concludes part one of my interview with Steve Layton. If you like what you're listening to, please leave us a rating and a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. And like always, head over to our Instagram page to put a face behind the name. Our Instagram is @cowboystories_podcast. Stay tuned for part two coming out soon. Thanks.